Himalayan knife.
So new that wave.
They sort of predated the new wave.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shows how much you know about musics.
Well, that's true. I never said I did.
Linoleum Knife is a podcast about films, the cinema.
The current cinema.
Not about, well, not about calculators or Kraftwerk. Or anything else. We are strictly about the cinema. Always, we never digress or discuss any other things that are not directly related to the week's current films.
Unless, of course, we do.
Unless we decide, yeah. Alonzo Duralde, who is not me, is the host, a host of this show. He is from therap.com, and he is also from What the Flick, which is on the internet, and you can look at it instead of reading it or listening to it. And I am Dave White of themovies.com. Well, no, not themovies.com.
No, no,
he's, you're from therap.com. I'm from movies.com.
Correct.
Both of us are film critics.
Boy, howdy.
For our jobs, our actual jobs.
Somebody pays us to do this.
Yeah.
Not this show.
Not this show, but the writing part of it.
Yes.
And I played Pocket Calculator by Kraftwerk. Because of money, which will be made this weekend by Marvel and Disney for Iron Man 3.
For a movie that has more than a little technology in it.
How long do you think we need to have a discussion about Iron Man 3? Like, here's what I'm wondering. It's Saturday. We're recording this on Saturday instead of our normal Sunday.
So it's all different.
Because we have very full lives.
It's completely a whole other, you know, the 10 o'clock is different.
A lot of things going on. And it's only Saturday, and I'm already tired of hearing about it, thinking about it, discussing it, hearing people write Facebook posts that say, off to see Iron Man 3. Yay! Like, that's how I know I'm going to take you out of my newsfeed today. That plus also May the 4th be with you.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other way. If you're my friend, you get a pass. But otherwise, you're done on my newsfeed on Facebook. That and April 20th. Good indicators of who gets taken off my newsfeed.
See, I'm over May the 4th and I'm over 420. I do, however, like the fact that January 2nd is Jerry Reichel Day. Because she's Jan 2.
I get that. That's all right.
That's fresh.
I'm still, yeah.
That is funky fresh.
I'm still into it. If something is funky fresh, doesn't that make it not
fresh, whatsoever? I never thought about it. It's true.
And isn't the expression funky fresh not fresh?
That is true.
You're, yeah.
Yes. But I never thought about the fact that funky has a whole other meaning. It's super bad.
So anyway, Iron Man 3
is a thing.
We can, yeah, I mean,
well, that's, we should,
we are going to talk about,
yes,
it.
Yes, of course. I mean, we can't not talk about,
tell
it,
people. I mean, we don't need to tell you what it's about. It's about Iron Man 3.
Yes.
It comes back from more Iron Manning,
right,
and fighting a criminal.
What is interesting about this one is that the reins have been handed over to Shane Black.
That is the interesting thing.
Yeah. And usually, you know, it's not like, oh, you know, whoever is directing a movie that has three in the title usually doesn't matter. Usually they're just kind of coming in and, you know, not messing up the franchise too much and making sure that it stays aloft enough in the hopes that four will come out. But, you know, I think that Marvel Entertainment, whoever is behind all these movies, is sort of confident enough in the giant franchise machine coming off the Avengers that I was like, all right, well, let's do something kind of interesting here. Let's not just cue the obvious, you know, line. So they bring in Shane Black, who is best known as the writer of mega hit action movies like Lethal Weapon and The Long Kiss Goodnight and The Last Boy Scout. But he is also the writer-director of a movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, starring Mr. Robert Downey Jr., which is one of my favorite Christmas action movies. He likes Christmas, the Shane Black.
Yeah, he does. And I like that about Shane
Me
Black.
Me too.
I don't know what his deal is with Christmas. Has he ever discussed it?
He's talked about, he's talked about specifically how L.A. Christmas is so great because it's so doubly artificial.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he likes lighting, you know, with little lights all over the place.
Well, that's cool too.
Yeah. And anyway,
you have trees in every shot. Exactly. Christmas tree.
So this is a Christmas movie, which, you know,
Tony Stark has a lot of Christmas trees.
He does.
In his lair.
Being the Christmas movie guy, I was very excited that Shane Black is keeping up his Christmasosity with this movie. And the plot-wise, this movie's a mess. There's a whole lot of things that go nowhere and characters that wind up being dupes and details that don't make sense or aren't explained sufficiently. But what Black is really good at doing is writing smart-ass banter, and Downey is really good at delivering it. And in fact, this movie starts almost exactly like The Long Kiss Goodnight, which is with Downey narrating and then deciding that what he's just said is wrong and he's going to start over again.
Right.
Like, in both those, I mean, so I immediately thought, okay, well, this is going to be a Shane Black movie and not just another installment in the Avengers saga. Although this does kind of pick up where the Avengers leaves off, you know, Tony has saved the world and everybody loves him, but he is plagued with anxiety attacks and insomnia and trying to figure out, you know, what else to do. And then plot things happen, and they're not particularly of interest. But the banter stuff is such fun to watch, and I've always enjoyed the relationship between Downey and Gwyneth Paltrow. I think, like, I almost only ever like Gwyneth Paltrow now in the Iron Man movies, you know, which you would not think of as a good sort of platform for an actress. But I think Downey just sort of gooses her in a way where she is relaxed and has fun. And,
yeah,
you know, maybe it's because they're both second generation, you know, her mom was Blythe Danner, his dad,
possibly,
Robert Downey, was an underground filmmaker. I don't know what it is, but the franchise or Downey or somebody is bringing something out of Paltrow that she's not delivering elsewhere. And so, but even that was a bit of a disappointment because on the one hand, you know, early on in the film, this isn't a spoiler. She gets to put on the armor. It's like, woo, you know,
yeah, that's in all of them.
She's in the thick of it.
All the promotional clips show her in the armor.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. But then on the other hand, like, she spends a good chunk of the film's climax, like, trapped under something heavy and dangling from a machine and going, and it's very kind of Perils of Pauline. Like, she might as well be tied to the conveyor belt and heading toward the buzzsaw, you know.
Speaking of buzzsaws and other noises, the noises that you are hearing that you know, behind us are the direct result of it being a very warm day in Los Angeles. All of our windows are open. Two of our neighbors are moving.
Yes.
The hydraulic sounds of their rental trucks are moving up and down, and other noises are happening.
I think anybody
on
who's listened to this show at least once
know. I just wanted to
knows
explain.
There's going to be a garbage truck.
I just wanted to explain what's going on.
Hydraulic drill or, you know, something.
The
So that's pretty much my take on Iron Man 3. I enjoyed the banter enough to not care that the story makes no sense.
There are enough stray elements of pleasure in this movie to make me happy.
Like, I like his relationship with the kid who helps him out, how he's completely, he never treats the kid like anything but another annoying adult.
When the kid showed up, I thought, oh no. Oh God, a kid. There's a kid in the movie. And I thought, I'm just going to go. I'm going to leave. Right, I'm going to go. Right now. I'm leaving. And then the kid turned out to be okay. Like, he really did. He wasn't kiddish too much.
No, and Downey never lets him.
Never lets him be a cute kid.
Yeah,
he
even jokingly works the cute kid angle, and right. Downey's still not having it.
Right. So, as I was about to getting bang, bang, bang. There's enough pleasure. There are enough pleasurable moments in this film that it made me happy, and made me not regret sitting through all 2 hours and 20 minutes. But this is the first big movie of the summer.
Yeah,
summer is it's now. Summer is right now.
Summer's here, and the time is right to pay extra for 3D
and
hear the sound from the next theater
every week until the end of August. Or rather, till the beginning to middle of August, right, when they start burning things off.
Yeah.
For the next 12 to 14 weeks, there will be at least one, if not two, huge events. Huge events per week.
Right.
Each one of these giant products are the result of an enormous amount of labor and energy and money and marketing and merchandising. And I and the way they are sold to you each week is that this is the most important thing that has ever happened this week.
Right.
And if that thing isn't the Empire Strikes Back, then they lied to me. I said this on Rotten Tomatoes show this week. I was on the Rotten Tomatoes show. And I'm not talking about radio. I'm not talking about spectacle or thrills or a wild ride. I'm talking about
substance.
A film that will last. Something that I will love for the next 30 years or more, that I want to watch again, that is meaningful not just to me personally but to the world, meaningful to the history of cinema. This is not too much to ask. And it's not too much to ask because the studios are out there pounding their chests and selling you the idea that it is the thing that's going to change your life.
True. I mean, to some extent, yes. I don't think they're promising The Empire Strikes Back.
They are promising an event of importance. Sure. That is what they are promising.
Yeah.
And so when the movie doesn't wind up doing that, when it's simply good enough, good enough to make itself a link between another chapter in the franchise.
Right.
That's not good enough for me.
I have to say,
I'm not happy about that because I've been told over and over and over and over and over again how monumental this thing is going to be. But it turns out not to be that thing.
And Iron Man 3, you think, was sold to you with that kind of promise?
Every single one of these summer movies is sold to you like that. The Great Gatsby is sold to you like that. Can you drive around this city without seeing The Great Gatsby on a billboard or a bus? Mm. You can't.
True.
It's everywhere. The commercials are on TV. I don't care.
All right.
It's a lot. And so what then happens is, while this is going on, simultaneously, you are then told, hey, it's summer, just relax. just relax and let it happen. You know, like it's
a summer movie.
It's a summer movie. What do you expect?
Right.
You expect art? Yes.
Well,
F you, I expect art. You know what? Because The Empire Strikes Back is art. I know I keep saying that title, but this is what I'm... Raiders of the Lost Ark? Art. And they mean something. They are pop art.
Right.
Okay. They're not serious, but they are still art. And that is important. It is always going to be important. And I refuse to say that, you know, entertaining enough is enough when you're telling me that this gigantic thing is that important.
I mean, we've talked about this on the show before. It's that classic thing where you write a bad review of a movie like this, and a commenter invariably says, "What did you expect? An Oscar-winning drama?" and it negates the idea that there are good movies like this and not so good movies like this. Like by virtue of it being a summer movie or a blockbuster or a big sci-fi,
you no longer have to make distinctions.
Exactly. They're all equal. And you know very well that's true. That's like basically saying that, you know, The Dark Knight and The Phantom are the same because they're superhero movies. Like no. And if you corner any of these twits with their Oscar-winning dramas, they would be forced to admit that. Even if you're judging it on the curve of big, loud summer blockbuster, Iron Man 3 does come up a little short.
Yes.
But you're right, it does have enough pleasure in it to not make it an unbearable experience.
And there's just so much, you know, visual confusion in the film. The action sequences are edited in a way that makes them, you don't know what's happening.
And that's a lot coming from you, because you are a defender of the Transformers movies.
Right. And when I've walked into Michael Bay's, you know, blenderized kind of world,
mm-hmm.
that's one thing. But I expect something different from Shane Black, and I expect something different from Iron Man. Hmm. I'm not saying that each film shouldn't have its expectation.
Sure.
Expectation level. Okay.
But they have laid down
a... They've thrown down their own gauntlet.
Right.
And I, you know, I want to take them at their word. Hmm. When Michael Bay throws down something, you're thinking, okay, well, whatever, dude.
You're too
kind. Yes, yes, yes. You know what I mean?
I'm wondering now if it's going
to
be...
And the product placement was very distracting to me.
Yes.
They didn't need to do it, but there it was all laid out, you know,
yeah.
And used in a way that made certain shots totally superfluous, like... you know, why does the camera have to pan around this kind of stuff?
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to. It just did because they wanted to be in the film.
I like the first two Iron Man movies. I mean, I even like Iron Man 2, which a lot of people, you know, like to poop on. The other movies that led up to the Avengers...
You go back to Iron Man 2, my review on movies.com, and I gave it a good review because I was... in that moment, I was...
Jazzed.
I was jazzed and all caught up, and yeah. I confused... my enthusiasm
with quality
with yeah so
well, I don't know. I mean, have you seen it again? Do you know that you were wrong? Or
no, I've not seen it since.
Okay, well then stand by your review.
No, I'm not going to. I'm not always standing by my reviews. All right, sometimes I'm wrong.
All right,
it's one of the reasons why I'm glad iFilm doesn't exist anymore. I don't want anybody looking at that stuff.
I'm just saying that anyway. Where I was going with this is the other movies that led up to the Avengers left me cold. I know you disagree with me on this, but I wasn't a Thor fan, I wasn't a Captain America fan, I wasn't a Hulk fan, but then I loved the Avengers. And so now I'm just wondering, like, are all these placeholders going to be kind of like, whatever, until, like, Avengers 2, which will hopefully be amazing.
You know? And that's why, you know, film criticism is so subjective, because I really enjoyed Captain America.
I know.
I really enjoyed Thor.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Avengers. I like the first Iron Man.
Yeah.
This type of movie, you know, and now that they're all coming from the same people, I want consistency of quality.
Sure. Well, you know, Disney just announced that now that starting in like 2017 or something, they're going to do, maybe I don't know, sooner than that maybe, a new Star Wars movie
every year. That news does not bother me.
You think they can keep up the quality?
No.
You will eat the sausage no matter how...
Will they pay me?
Grimly it is prepared.
They pay me to eat the sausage.
Well, you will enjoy the sausage.
I might not even enjoy it, but I'll be there for it. You know, it's my job.
Well, of course. That's not the point, though. When you say it doesn't worry you, it's like you're implying that you're okay. I mean,
yeah. No, I just don't care.
Oh, well, that's fine, too. I buy that. Fair enough.
I will care when I have to go see it, but right at this moment,
yeah,
you know, a meteor could hit the earth. Yeah, you know, I'm sure. Not. It does. I'm not. I do not. Here's another thing I don't like. Let's keep talking about this for a minute. If we have to push other movies back to next week, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm also annoyed and tired of the endless speculation of what's coming.
Yeah.
Who's doing what? You know, every little drip and drop of, you know, deal-making news.
Right. Well, it's because there's this... There's this internet now.
Yeah, great.
Which must be fed.
I don't need that much feeding.
No.
Of the information.
Sites that are devoted to that stuff are like on, you know, just... living for it, you know?
Yeah, and I don't care. I don't care.
No, about I agree.
I don't even know what movie I'm seeing next week or what's opening.
I know there's another Star Trek coming up, but I couldn't tell you what week.
Yeah, and so I just want to talk about what has already happened.
Sure.
That's the only thing that's worth talking about. What's happening next month or next year, I'm not interested. I don't want to see the teaser trailer. I don't want to have an endless discussion about who would be the great director and what would be the great cast. And none of that. I don't like it. it bores me. And when people engage me with that kind of stuff, I just really wanted to start talking about food, books, music, art, whatever. Anything except, do you think J.J. Abrams is going to be a good director of, you know, Jane Eyre 3? No, I don't know.
However, we do stand by our assertion that only Wes Anderson should direct the Peanuts 3D cartoon.
There is that.
But that's it.
That is a fact. any fool could see that that's the only person that should do that.
No kidding. All right, fine. Well, let's move on. Also this week is...
The Iceman.
The Iceman, yes. We can talk about that. Why don't you explain what it is?
It's about Richard Kuklinski, who was a contract killer between the years 1966 and 1986. He killed over 100 people for money.
Maybe even over 200, depending on whose account you believe.
Yeah. He was so good at his job and keeping it secret that his own wife and children did not know that he was connected to organized crime at all.
Well, that's how the movie portrays it anyway.
That's what I hear.
I've heard differing things about
that. The wife kind of...
The wife maybe kind of had some... Yeah.
I see. Well, she didn't know he was murdering people.
Probably not.
Chopping up their bodies and freezing them in an ice cream truck.
Probably not. Although I'm sure a lot of things turned up that would have, that fell off a truck.
You know? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Michael Shannon is Kuklinski.
Who else?
And he's amazing in this film. He's so great. He is American cinema's foremost practitioner of crazy eyes.
He's having the career that Michael Rooker should have had
after
Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yes.
The disturbing guy. We didn't mention he's also in Mud
and
playing probably the least twitchy character he's ever been asked to do on screen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean, but...
The movie...
I was going to say, outside of Shannon's performance...
...is serviceable.
Yeah.
It's a very standard issue. Here's a story about a guy in organized crime, and he did some bad things, and he was kind of a bad dude, and here's what his childhood was like, so you kind of know why he does these bad things. And...
Did they really address that?
They do a little bit. They show you a couple flashbacks to...
Oh, that's right. Really beatings,
brutal
yes.
abuse. Right. And it does help you understand a little bit about like how he could become such a chilled out sociopath,
right?
that he could murder people without blinking and collect money for it, and then at the same time be very desperate for a kind of safe and warm home life,
family environment,
and live comfortably in this sort of dissociative
double life
sort of way. The story is, like I say, pretty run of the mill.
Yeah. It's mainly there to prop up his performance.
But his performance makes the movie so worth seeing that even though it's not a great movie, he's great in it. And I'll even say Winona Ryder is good to watch too, and I'm kind of over her. I don't know why I've just sort of run dry on her, but here she has a very sort of anxious quality that I really appreciated, and
she even kind of offers you an undertone of like of being so. Ignorant of what's going on, that it feels like she's making an effort to be this ignorant of what's going on. You know, she does that in, I think, in a subtle way. Yeah, it's not a great movie, but it's he's so good.
Go see it for him.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if he's worth seeing it in the theater for. I mean, like maybe TV. Rent it for him. You know,
rent it for him, whatever.
I wanted to go back and ask you one other thing about Iron Man 3.
What?
Did you think the 3D added anything?
Nothing.
Me neither. Okay.
Nothing.
That was all I had to ask. Do you have anything else on Iceman, or should we move on?
I just move on. It's. I know we're not giving it a lot of time, but
It's a minor film.
Is yeah, and his but his performance really is, it is makes it worth seeing.
No, no, definitely, no question. I saw a documentary this week called "Scatter My Ashes at Bergdorf's."
I kind of do want to see that film because
it's got like every living designer.
It's got a lot of cool people in it. Yeah, a lot of cool people in it who do cool things.
Yeah. And part of my
problem... Fashion designers who make interesting work.
Part of my problem with the movie is I think they got all these people because the store said, hey, you should be in this movie. And if the store is telling yes. them, hey, you should be in this movie, it means that the movie is going to be completely uncritical and
right.
nothing but a long commercial, which it kind of is, this movie, unfortunately. Right. So if you are... If the prospect of seeing, like, Michael Kors and Karl Lagerfeld and Dolce & Gabbana and the Rodarte girls and, you know, Tom Ford and Christian Louboutin and, like, every fashion person I could think of with the possible exception of Costello Tagliapietra is in this movie talking about how much they love Bergdorf Goodman and how, you know,
it was... What about that girl from the Hills, Lauren...
She isn't... Lauren Conrad is not in this either. How it was their dream to be in the store.
Do you think they sell the Lauren Conrad collection in Bergdorf Goodman's?
I'm thinking no. You do see them check out the line put together by Tommy Hilfiger's daughter. And they wind, really? They choose not to buy it, but they tell her that, you know, she's onto something, and maybe after a couple of years, a couple more collections, you know, that they'll carry her.
When dad starts greasing her palms.
Yeah, no more. Kidding. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it literally takes half an hour before you get to, like, a timeline talking about when the store opened and that kind of thing. So, I mean, they're not...
What time do they open?
That's not what I mean.
I want to go.
I mean, they opened like
maybe I want to go shopping.
Like in 1890, whatever. I forget now.
That's too early for me to get up.
Shut up. They don't really get into the history of the store at all. They talk a little about like the 2008 economic crash and how hard that was for retailers, but like, you know,
probably not for them.
How did the store stay open during the Depression, for instance? Like that
rich people.
That might be a story, you know, that was worth mentioning. I mean, I read that book about Riches, the Atlanta department store,
right.
which was kind of dull, but at least it talked about it put things into a historical context, you know, like the, you know, when like Martin Luther King, the first time he ever got arrested on a civil rights thing, was trying to occupy their lunchroom.
Right.
And they talked about the Depression and how they changed up what they sold and what price points and blah, blah, blah. Right. You know, none of that in this movie. It's just like shoes.
I'll still watch it.
So, yeah, if you want to watch 90 minutes of shoes, this is your movie. Also this week, Something in the Air.
Something in the Air, the new film from Olivier Assayas.
Right.
It's a French movie set in 1971, starring mostly newcomers.
Yeah.
Primarily focused on an 18-year-old boy named Gilles,
mm-hmm.
who is probably kind of a semi-autobiographical version of Olivier Assayas.
Mm.
Assayas was born in 1955, which would put him
around that age,
18 yeah. years old, around 1971 when
16 and
when the film
takes place.
It is, and there was another character earlier in his 1994 movie, Cold Water, also named Gilles, so...
Oh, interesting.
It's possibly a coincidence, but...
It's his, maybe it's his Antoine Doinel.
Yeah, possibly. Okay. We don't know, but okay. I did think about that. So, it's set in the events, the 3 years...
Right.
...after the events of May 1968, which were total... Social upheaval in France.
The students and the workers struck. And
the students started striking. The students started protesting. And then the workers followed suit. And they brought the French economy to a standstill.
Yeah.
And it changed a lot of things about, you know, social programs and social movements in France to this day.
Sure.
It
was their radicalized moment.
And so, basically, it's a film about all these kids who are privileged enough...
Right.
To be able to devote time to that, to protesting, to thinking, to studying, to reading, to making art, to hanging out, which is a really essential component.
Sure, building a movement.
The radicalized young, they need time to party, which is sort of also part of the politics.
Right. That's why the right wing in this country has done everything they can to make it impossible for young people to get educated or right. to be able to afford not work 80 jobs to pay off their student loans.
Yes.
Because if you're smart and you have some time to kill, you will smash the state.
Right. And so in between smashing the state, they get high and they get laid.
Yeah.
And the movie sort of drifts through this in a very gentle, bonged out kind of way.
It's not one of those movies that's very like plot. No. It's, you just sort of follow along and you sort of glean what's going on and what they're going through and how they feel about things and where their lives are all going to go.
Right. And what you're, what really takes place is you're watching a bunch of kids who were too young to have participated in the events of 1968.
Right.
Want to be participating in it now as adults 3 years later, and coming to realizations very sort of internal and personal that things are dissolving.
Yeah.
And
it's like getting your older siblings, you know, Led Zeppelin albums.
Yeah. They're having to make choices about where their post-school lives are going to go. Are they going to need to work? Do they want to be in love rather than be, you know, revolutionaries?
Right.
And it's a very, very thoughtful, quiet examination of that. Yeah. I think it's beautifully shot. It's smart without being showy. It never judges these kids for being, you know, as privileged as they are.
Right.
I read a negative review where someone was calling them dilettantes, and I thought, you know what? You can't be a dilettante when you're 18.
You just do what's there in front of you.
You just do what's there in front of you. You know.
I think it's a movie that no matter what your politics are, you would find it interesting.
Right.
Even if you're just going, oh, well, you know, these bougie lefties, blah, blah, blah. Right. You know, I think even still you would find the movie of interest.
What I do love is that as everything sort of unwinds at the end and you realize that Gilles is, he's going to leave the hardcore radical friends behind. You know he is. He's still got this book about situationist theory that he's carrying around and reading. Even as he works as a PA on a B-movie set about dinosaurs and bikini cave women and Nazis. 5 years later, punk rock is going to happen. Based on situationist ideas.
Really?
Yes. I think he's going to be in a punk rock band. I think that's what's going to happen.
He's going to be Sa Plan Pour Moi.
Well, maybe.
Gilles will become Plastic Bertrand.
So, yeah, I really like this movie. I love Olivier Assayas's films. I think he's such a really, really strong, interesting director. If you haven't seen any of his movies, go look them up.
Yeah, see Summer Hours.
See Summer Hours. See Irma Vep, which is one of the greatest movies of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
There's Carlos, which is like a six-hour
miniseries. There's also a shorter theatrical version.
You don't want to see the short version.
Long one, okay.
I
need to see more of his stuff. I love Summer Hours. I love Irma Vep, but I haven't seen Carlos. I haven't seen...
There are a lot of other titles.
Cold Water,
Boarding Dream Lover, Gate, Boarding Demon Gate. Lover.
Demon Lover. I keep saying...
Yeah.
Demon Lover, yes.
Dream Lover.
Dream Lover was that
it's
stupid
the Mariah
movie.
Carey story.
No, that was this dumb 80s movie with like James Spader or something.
Oh, okay.
All right. Let's
we skipped some movies last week.
Let's sit through the ones we skipped last week, yes. So, all right. Mira Nair's The Reluctant Fundamentalist.
Boring.
Such a wasted opportunity. Because I think the story of somebody who is Pakistani who has this drive to become wealthy and Americanized and Westernized and then has 9/11 ruin all of it because everybody starts treating him like dirt and assuming that he's a terrorist. That's a great story.
It is.
On paper, I think, yes, that's a great story. I want to see that. And boy, this movie tells it terribly.
Yeah.
Terribly.
Riz Ahmed stars as a young Pakistani man who... just got dollar signs in his eyes.
Yeah.
Like he's the son of a middle class.
He's a poet.
But respected poet.
Who's been sort of letting the family fortune dwindle.
Yeah. And so his sister is a soap opera actress who says things at the beginning like, I just want a house in the Hamptons and big American boobs. Like that's, she actually says this. And he's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Like he goes off to New York with his business degree.
And he wants to work on Wall Street.
And he does it. And the job he gets is maybe the nastiest.
Yeah,
kind of
like
work.
He's like Richard Gere in Pretty Woman without the charm.
Yeah,
it's like let's destroy corporations and sell them for parts.
He's a corporate appraiser who goes in and finds out how valuable the various components are of people's businesses, and then invariably recommends ruthless layoffs, merciless downsizing, just destroying the lives of workers.
He don't care.
Busting unions as often as he possibly can, and doesn't care. He's happy. He's got his. He got himself a girlfriend. Played by Kate Hudson, in a role that will make you feel sorry for her.
I did not feel sorry
for her. She's this Larry Clark wannabe art photographer who stands around in the park and shoots skateboarders all day.
What's up, Rockers?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And so he's got a good life. 9/11 happens. Everyone starts treating him badly. Yes. And he's like, I'm going home to Pakistan. And then sort of develops very strong feelings for traditional Islam.
Right. And may or may not be like tied to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, may or may not be tied to terrorist activities. Yeah.
Again, you're making all this sound way more interesting than the movie.
I know. It's a tedious, obvious, TV ham-fisted, kind of sledgehammery points at you all the time. You see, he is creating economic terrorism. And now it is all going to happen to him.
Yeah, it's... And
bad, awful. Bad.
And Kate Hudson is terrible.
You want to see a good movie about terrorism with Riz Ahmed in it?
Yeah, go see Four Lions.
Four Lions. Go get yourself a copy of Four Lions. It's the funniest, bleakest comedy about people who blow themselves up that you ever have seen.
It shouldn't work, but it totally does. He was also in that, whatever that Michael Winterbottom Tess of the D'Urbervilles in India movie was.
With
Frida Pinto.
With Frida Pinto.
Yeah.
I forget the name of that movie. It came out last year.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
This one is not good.
No.
And it's one of the few, like, bad Liev Schreiber performances I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He's playing this, like, drunk American journalist.
He's playing the same role as the guy did in Life of Pi.
Yeah.
He sits at a table and goes, playing, and then what happened?
Yeah, he's playing as told to.
Yeah.
Which is a thankless role, but boy, you know, he's not helping matters at all.
And the other movie we skipped last week was...
At Any Price.
At Any Price.
So Ramin Barani makes his name as a micro-budget indie filmmaker with no stars, very gritty, very almost neo-realist kind of films like Man Push Cart and Chop Shop and not California Solo, Goodbye Solo. And so now he's sort of made it into the kind of indie big leagues. This movie it's produced by Killer Films, by Christine Bichon's company. It's got names in it, you know. It's got Dennis Quaid and Zac Efron, and it's shot in the, you know, the sprawling cornfields of the Midwest, whereas all of his movies have been very kind of urban and gritty. And, you know, clearly there's crane shots, you know. He's got sort of a budget here. And he wrote it, you know, based on his own observations of what happens in farm country and stuff. And boy, is it disappointing.
There's a film to be made about the corporate takeover of American agriculture. Absolutely. And small farms.
Yes.
About genetically modified seed companies, corporations dictating how things are going to go. About, you know, about forcing people to buy these seeds. Destroying the tradition of cleaning seeds from year to year.
About the requirement of the small farmer to continually expand and consume, or else they're going to be wiped out by somebody else who's consuming and expanding faster than they are.
And the movie that should be made about that is a documentary. seriously. The family drama stuff that lays on top of the really interesting, unusual story is not
interesting.
Worth your time. And it bums me out on a personal level because your good friend, Kim Dickens, is in the film and she plays Dennis Quaid's wife.
Yes, and she's good.
Well, she's always good.
Yes.
If she has four lines in the movie...
You believe them.
She's still good.
Yeah.
And so there are times when I'll see movies with her, I'll be like, I don't like this movie. Kim sure is nice.
And this is one of those movies.
That makes it hard, you know, when your job is to talk about whether a movie's like or not.
I know.
And then, oh, hey, friend who's an actor who's in the film, you know. That's tough.
I blame none of this on her. I blame
Of course not. And actors never are responsible.
I also blame
they show up and they do.
I blame none of this on Quaid. I think he's good, and I believe the character. I liked his moments with Kim Dickens. I liked his moments with the actress who plays Zac Efron's girlfriend, where she sort of becomes his kind of de facto like protege, and he starts taking her out on sales runs, and she turns out to be really good
at
it.
That's an interesting story,
too. That's an interesting story.
They just chuck out the window. Yeah.
Zac Efron, bless his heart.
Have more of a problem with him than
I do. Well, here's the thing. I don't think that he's untalented in any way. I think that he has potential as a film actor.
Right.
I think that he is trying too hard to
get gritty.
Like, okay, I've been the teen idol thing. I'm not going to do that. So now, like, you know, he's trying to follow the Johnny Depp trajectory of like, okay, forget 21 Jump Street. Now I'm going to go work with like John Waters and Jim Jarmusch, and I'm going to, you know, do crazy things with my hair and grow ugly mustaches. And, you know, you're going to tell that I'm an actor now. You know, in my review, I said he's a racehorse who wants to be a mule.
Do you think he's mad at Shia LaBeouf for getting that part in the new Lars von Trier movie?
I'm sure he read for it several times.
You know he did.
Probably.
You know he wanted that part.
Yeah. Well, he's another Disney Channel guy.
Yeah.
So in this movie, we're supposed to buy Zac Efron, cute as a basket of puppies, Zac Efron as a, like, hard-living, fast-driving stock car racer who beats the crap out of people and has sex with Heather Graham, whose role is completely underwritten.
Right.
I didn't buy it for a second. This movie just really left me cold, and the cinematographer gets the most out of those cornfields, you know?
Right.
But it's just not compelling.
The friend that I took to see this movie when it was over said, "You owe me for that one." Our friend Anthony was visiting from England.
Oh, man,
He accompanied me to several screenings during the week.
And that was the only one that he was like...
He's like, "You owe me for that one."
Is that it?
That's it for the movies. We have about 10 minutes. We can do quick DVD recommendations. Okay. We got to get out of here. We have dinner reservations.
Oh, fine. My DVD pick this week ties into Something in the Air. It is a French film from a few years ago called Ma Saison Super 8. My Super 8 Season.
Yes.
We screened it at Outfest. It's a film about a young radical during 1968 in France, discovering that most of the leftist movements are not interested in his gay stuff.
Just like in Something in the Air, where the leftist movement was not interested in what the women had to say.
Their
job was to make the dinner and set the table.
Yeah.
And take off their tops.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's portrayed very cleverly, where they don't hit you over the head with it. It's like, oh yeah, these guys were pigs.
Right.
So the women's movement would sort of come later, I guess.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Ghost Wife.
Why don't you tell them the real title so they can find that?
Oh, it's called Ghost Wife.
It's not called Ghost Wife. I believe the film you're referring to is called Safe Haven.
Oh, that was just a working title.
So is it a sequel to Ghost Dad with Bill Cosby?
Yes.
Spiritually. Did you see what I did there?
Okay. The boringly titled Safe Haven, which should have been called
Ghost Wife.
Is a terrible movie based on a Nicholas Sparks novel where Julian Hough...
So it's a movie based on a Nicholas Sparks
novel. ...runs off to The Notebook?
Never saw it.
You just shut up. How's that?
That movie was beautiful.
The Notebook is so good.
I never saw it.
She runs away
in a
dither because her ex-husband is a psychopath and chasing her and stuff, and she runs off to a little seaside town where Josh Duhamel is there with his kids because he's, you know, a widower
with his weather-beaten truck and his weather-beaten flannel shirts. Yeah.
But
not weather-beaten face.
They get all sexy in the rain and stuff happens, and the husband finds her and chases her, and then everything gets set on fire, and then people die, and you realize that the person who's been giving her advice through the whole movie, her neighbor lady, is actually the dead wife of Josh Duhamel, and she's a ghost.
Da, 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 da. Ghost wife. Let's do letters.
It's the best. Really, really watch Ghost Wife because I'm right.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Letters. What do we got?
Like a letter.
Okay.
All right. From Patrick Kellogg.
Hmm.
I put together a list of my most disappointing movies of all time.
I can admire that.
My rule was that it not only had to be a bad movie, but it also had to ruin something that was formerly right and good and pure that came before it.
Alrighty. How could you stop at 10?
Number one, More American Graffiti.
Ooh.
This is the film that made me realize at age 11 that not all movies are good.
I made a reference to More American Graffiti when Disney made the whole announcement about Star Wars and somebody was talking about sequels. Somebody pointed out something as a good example of a sequel to a Lucas movie. And I said, yeah, what about More American Graffiti?
Two, Beloved.
Ooh, yeah, that's fighting words with Dave White.
Not fighting words, but I didn't hate Beloved. And I really think Tandy Newton and Kimberly Elise are really great in that movie.
Okay.
Three, S. Darko, and I'm not sure.
Oh, that was that straight-to-DVD sequel to Donnie Darko.
I don't know what that is.
It has one of the little gothy girl actresses in it, like, you know, Chloe Moretz or somebody, I forget.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard not good about it.
I haven't heard a thing about it. I didn't know it even existed.
I think, what's his face, Richard, the Donnie Darko guy.
Yeah.
Richard.
Whatever.
Kelly.
Yeah.
It's like, was not involved. you're not pinning this on me.
Someone's yelling outside.
Yes.
Number four, The Passion of the Christ, which I assume ruined the Bible.
The New Testament.
Number five, Pinocchio, the 2002 remake with Roberto Benigni.
Ooh, I never saw that one, but that had some of the most entertaining reviews I've ever read. My favorite being, if Osama bin Laden wants to hide out where no one can find him, I recommend he check out a matinee of Pinocchio.
Battlefield Earth.
Ruined Scientology or John Travolta?
It ruined...
Dreadlocks?
Perhaps.
Betty Davis?
It ruined Betty Davis.
Because he's doing a Betty Davis voice.
He is completely doing a Betty Davis voice in that film. The 2008 remake of Sleuth.
Oof, yeah. That didn't ruin the original for me, but yeah, it was a slog.
Breakfast of Champions?
Oh, man. I paid money to see that. And I later met Alan Rudolph, and I was like, seriously, what was that?
Number nine, The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolution.
Oh, yes, no question.
10, a bonus tie, two movies that almost ruined sex for me. 8mm. And a film that you and I both really like.
Hardcore.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. I don't even think of that as sex. That's people standing around.
We give your bad movie list a 95% knife. Because we're going to give you 8mm, but we're not going to give you Eyes Wide Shut.
Right.
And I'll give you Beloved. You can have Beloved. Okay. I'm the only one who thinks Beloved was okay.
So, yes, listeners, if you want to send us lists of movies you hate.
Sure.
That's cool, too.
Yeah. The 10 worst things you've ever seen.
We'll take them.
Things that you despise.
Thank you, Patrick.
And, again, the other letter that I've been saving is so long, we don't have time to go into it right
now. Should we just post it on the Facebook page?
Next week. No. We really do. It's something we want to talk about.
I see. Okay.
So we'll do it next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we thank you for listening. And, the DVD recommendations we'll be listing on our Linoleum Knife page at Facebook and also on our Twitter account at LinoleumCast. And, do us a favor and click on them next time you're buying something at Amazon.
Yeah. Even
if you aren't buying our DVD recommendations, if clicking on those is your portal into Amazon, we'll get some kickback from your purchase, and that would be great.
Super love money.
Ah, yes.
We're really into monetizing.
Not that we're making anything from this show yet. Yet. Just you wait. In the meantime, check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this program for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a review, that would be swell. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com, and you can drop us a line with your 10 best, your 10 worst, your comments, your questions, anything else to linoleumpodcast, one word, at gmail.com.
That's it.
That's all I got.
That's everything. You're just gonna sit there and pull stray mustache hairs off
your tongue.
I got a
hair in my mouth. And I thought we were doing this show together, so you could have spoken up.
I'm gonna speak up right now.
Thank you.
Goodbye.